Veronica, thank you for introducing me. And also, I wanted to thank Terry for inviting me this afternoon. Hi, my name's Owen. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Owen.
Happy Memorial Day. Today is a very special Memorial Day for me. Today I'm celebrating 36 years of continuous sobriety. Woo! And you're keeping me sober today. I was, in early sobriety, I was at a meeting and somebody said, if you don't remember the first day that you took a drink on your own, somebody didn't give it to you, that you got your first drink by yourself, if you don't remember that, you're going to drink again. I thought that was kind of a wisecrack. But eventually I did remember it. I was a kid. I suffered from the Irish virus. And I had been babysitting for my younger brother. Parents were off someplace. He had colic. I finally got him to sleep. And I had this idea that I was going to find out what my mom and dad liked so much. So I went down to the kitchen right next to the washer and dryer. I stood up and said, the washing machine, and I opened up the cabinet. And the bottle with the 7-Up, that was my mother's favorite. So I pulled that out, and I tried not to get any fingerprints on it. I took the top off of it. Oh, God. Oh, Lord, please. No. I'm crawling up the steps, I get in the bathroom. Please don't let me get caught. I'll never do that again. Jeepers, creepers. Then, on Memorial Day, 1986, I'm passed out in the bushes, Princeton campus. Out of it. Something's in my pants. So I get out of under the bushes and pull my pants down. Jesus Christ, it fucking ticks on my ball! Co-eds are walking by laughing at me, and I'm pulling these things off, and I'm thinking, Jesus, Mary and Joseph, am I going to get something from this? Lyme disease or something? It was nuts! I stumbled into Murray Dodge Hall. Murray Dodge Hall on Princeton campus is kind of like the upper class hangout place. And there's three long tables along the side, and they have all kinds of cookies and appetizers and cheese and all kinds of stuff. And I'm loading up, and jonesing pretty bad. And I go up and I sat in the front. And I'm trying to eat this stuff, trying to get over this terrible hangover I had. All of a sudden, the room quieted down, and I turn around. This old man is walking in. He's got really thick glasses on, and everybody's reaching out like he's a movie star or something. And he waddles up and gets behind the desk, picks up this little bell, ding, 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 ding. Everybody quieted down. Got really quiet, settled down. Must have been 50, 60 people in there, and I'm sitting in the front row. Good morning, my name's Milt Crawford, and I'm an alcoholic. What the heck did I get into here? What's going on? Oh, man. So he says, is there anybody here for the first time? I didn't want to talk to this guy, but he waited for me, and he settled down, he nailed me right to the chair. He says, is anybody here for the first time? Yeah. Can you tell us your name? My name's Owen Patrick Parker. Who the fuck are you? Oh, people started laughing. We got a live one. Oh, man. The meeting went on and on and on. Some guy finally got up and he started to leave. I figured this was my way out, so I followed him out. He's going up the steps. It's up here, he says. Follow him up the steps, second floor, third floor. We go into the men's room. He goes into the stall. I go to the other stall. He says, well, what do you think? I said, oh, yeah, that's pretty interesting. He says, are you working? Well, not at the moment, but I got something lined up for tomorrow. I'm pretty sure I got somebody on the hook for tomorrow. He says, well, why don't you come on back to the meeting? Maybe we can do something for you tomorrow. Went back to the meeting. The meeting ended, and everybody's holding hands, and they're saying this prayer. I know this prayer. The part where it says, as we forgive those who trespass against us. It was the Our Father. But I was so fogged up, I didn't know what they were doing. Meeting ends. I feel the hand on the back of my neck. This guy by the name of Bobby Lee says, come on, we're taking you to lunch. So they took me across the street from Princeton University, pushed me back in the back seat, ordered me a double cheeseburger and a milkshake, and then they started talking about me. I'm sitting right there, and they're talking about me. What are we going to do with this guy? What are we going to do with this guy? Let's take him to the Salvation Army. Be done with them. Bobby Lee speaks up and he says, no, let's do it like they did in the old days. We can do this. So John the Roofer, Two Shirt Jim, John Dean, and a couple others are there. And they drew the short toothpick. John Dean got the short toothpick. Look, bring them over to my house around 5:30 tonight and we'll see what we can do with them. So that's what my adventure started right there. They took me around to other meetings during the day, and eventually 5:30 came, went to John D's house. He's standing in the door with a bathrobe and towels over his arm. Come on in and take a shower. We'll talk after you get out of the shower. I must have been really ripe, huh? You ever smelled anybody that had too much alcohol in their system? The next morning, somebody picked me up and took me to a meeting. It was a Winner's Circle meeting. And they took me to work afterwards. Each day this happened, somebody would pick me up in the morning and take me to work with them. One day I'm washing dishes. One day I'm doing demolition work. One day I got a stethoscope and a lab coat on. I'm making the rounds with the doctor. And this is how it proceeded. Going to a meeting, going to work. Going to a meeting, going to work. Finally, on a Thursday, I'm starting to feel that I'm going to be okay. At a meeting in the Baptist Church on Vandermeer Street, which is on the second floor, and it was a circle jerk meeting. And as it's going around, each person speaking, I kind of got the idea that sooner or later it's going to be me. And I'm starting to get nervous. My knees are banging together. What are we going to do? So it's my turn. Thank you very much. You don't want me to start over, do you?
No. I would like to see the
table. It's me, my turn, and here we go. Hi, my name's Owen, and I really don't know if I'm an alcoholic or not. My brother-in-law won't let me see my kids. And he told me when I was over to his house, he said if I didn't get off his lawn, he was going to call the cops. So I just, God, I couldn't stop crying. It was so terrible. I don't know what to do. Oh, Jesus Christ. My mother will turn over in her grave if she sees me. Nobody laughed. It was terrible. I'd never lost control of myself like that. At any rate, the meeting ends. We're going down the back steps. This arm reaches out from underneath the staircase and pulls me in. And it's this John Dean, who I'd been staying with, and the largest man I ever saw in my life. It's not polite to say fat, but geez, he was big. And John Dean says, well, Owen, did you get a sponsor yet? Well, John, I was going to ask one of you two guys. And John Dean looks at the fat guy and says, Charlie, can you keep an eye on him until I get back? I got to go out to California in 2 weeks. So this gentleman who I'd never met before is looking me right straight in the eye, and he says to me, let me smell your breath. What? I never heard anything so impolite in my life. Let me smell your breath, he says. So I let him have it. Well, you didn't drink today. Why don't you come stay in my garage until we figure out what to do with you? Charlie Johnson was my first sponsor. I was his 33rd pigeon. He allowed me the grand privilege of sleeping in his dirt floor garage with a vase of his dog sitting on the shop desk and a flea-bitten couch below a naked light bulb. I did 90 days there. I did my 90 days with a dead dog. Yeah. Somebody picked me up in the morning. They take me to work. They found work for me. I got money in my pocket. I remember going upstairs in Charlie's apartment in the cottage. Jesus, it was amazing. This guy had books on all kinds of alcoholism, mental problems, drug addiction, da-da-da-da-da. And I'm scouting out this. I'm really casing this joint. This is a nice, he's got a nice apartment here. I go in his bedroom, and his bedroom has got this beautiful mahogany chest of drawers. And on the top of the chest of drawers are eight. 8 of these coins. 8 coins. Make sure I get that back. I wonder how he did that. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8. I wonder how he got those. Well, of course, we know. You get them for every year that you're sober. I went in his pantry. In his pantry are 7 big bank bags. You know, the kind of bags that the guy at the restaurant takes his money into the bank? He's got 7 of these, and they're full. I'm thinking to myself, what's this guy doing on the side? There's a couple grand in it at least. Come to find out, he's treasurer at 7 AA meetings, and this is where he's keeping the loot. Amazing. Charlie babysat me for 90 days. He taught me about the steps. He answered my mail. I was having terrible mail. Oh, it was terrible. What are these steps all about? This thing about we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. How can you be powerless over alcohol? My mother used to give me a hot toddy when I was a kid. You get sick, she didn't go to school, you got a temperature. She gives me 1 hot toddy in the morning. The second day, you get 2 hot toddies. The third day, you go to the doctor. I never went to the doctor, but I always got the toddies. I really liked the hot toddies. They made me feel good. So how could that be bad? How could that make me powerless? I didn't understand what it was. What do you mean my life is unmanageable? Well, I don't know if you noticed, Owen, but you're unemployable. You're not employable in the condition you're in right now. We got to get you healthy physically and mentally. And bring your spirit back to life. So that's when my story really started, and I started listening to what was going on. These men picked me up in the morning and made me part of their lives. I was their project, and they listened to me telling my lies and telling my story and my excuses and all the things that have been screwed up. I really have had tremendous accomplishments up to this point in my life. I lost it all. I was married and I had 5 kids. I have 5 living children now. I had over 50 employees. I had employees in three different states, California, Florida, and New York. Who's paying their paychecks now? It was just nuts. I couldn't face the truth. Well, the part about coming to believe in a power greater than ourselves that could restore us to sanity, if you really believe that step, then you got to believe that you're insane. And I didn't want to believe. I didn't want anybody to think I was insane. I can admit it today. I can admit walking away from a thriving business and from a beautiful woman and wonderful children. It's insane to leave that on the table and just walk away from it. So where did I catch this disease? How did I become allergic to it? And how the heck can I stop? Stop. Really stop this time. So I'll tell you how I did it. It's not a rocket scientist thing. I started on the third step. I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God who made me. And I stood there and I looked at the ceiling and I said, "You made me, fix it." It was as simple as that. From that point on, I started listening at meetings. I could hear people at meetings. There was a French professor that went to the Thursday noon meetings. Her name was Gigi. Believe it or not. She tells this story. She raises her hand and she's talking to the meeting and she says, "If you're flying from Zurich into Paris, the airline stewardess will tell you this in three different languages. And in German." I don't know German. The oxygen mask comes down. You have to take it. Don't give it to your relative on your right. Don't give it to your kids on the left. You can't. You have to take care of yourself first. I got that. You have to take care of yourself first. That was a turning point for me. I realized that if I'm going to get healthy, it's up to me. I've got the most important job that I could possibly have, and that's to survive and to try and get back on my feet. So, letting go, making a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood it. Thank God for the people in my life. So I just followed the leader and I went to meetings and I did the steps as best that I could. And I just as a side note, please don't repeat this, I was very fond of marijuana also. But that eventually I got cured of also. So here I am. I did my 90 days, and I've got a job. Got a job driving a roll-off truck, a Big Mac roll-off truck, and I'm going to meetings. And I went to a commitment down at the Salvation Army down in South Pennsylvania. And after it was a speaker meeting. After the meeting, we're having coffee and donuts with the people that attended, and this one guy had the worst case of poor me's I'd ever heard in my life. He can't get a job. He's never going to be able to pay the child support. I said, "Look, get your stuff together. You can stay at my house. I'll help you get a job at this garbage company, and you can save your money up and get your own place and get yourself back. Have real life again." Well, he was really enthusiastic about that. He moves in with me, and I'm getting up in the morning, and I'm going to work, and he's getting up and going to work, and da 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 da. And one day, I'm driving back from my route. What you do is you bring the truck in, you dump it. They bring the truck in, they weigh it. You dump it, they weigh you again. That's how much they charge the company. So I'm going past the weighmaster. He says, "Hey, I see your boy made the front page of the paper today." "What are you talking about?" "The guy you helped get a job here. He made the front page of the paper." He hands me the paper out of the scale window, and I'm looking at it, and it says, "Man loses thumb on drug deal." What? He lost his thumb? You gotta be kidding me. "Hey, I'm gonna borrow the truck for an hour. I'll be right back." I go home, go up to the apartment. I go into the apartment. I go into his bedroom. He comes up from the mattress with his head's all wrapped up, with one eye showing, his arms in a cast. And he says, Let me explain. I can explain." And I fall. I ran as fast as I could down to the corner. There was a payphone in the corner. I called my sponsor. "Charlie, I got to talk to Charlie." "I don't care. Get him out of the conference. He told me I could call him anytime I wanted." Charlie, listen. The guy I had staying with me, he got his thumb cut off last night. Oh, Lord, love a doctor. Owen, can you hear me?" "Yeah, I can hear you. What do I do? "Owen, let me talk to your other ear." "All right, what?" He says, "Am I talking to your right ear?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "You have to call the police and tell them to go up to your apartment and get your key." "Charlie, man, I never ratted out anybody, man." He says, "Owen, you have to call the cop and let him help you. He'll come over. You'll take him to the apartment. He'll go in, he'll get the key, and he'll tell the guy to get his ass out of there." Thank God for sponsors. Whew. Never been so scared in my life. This was a big guy. I was really scared. So you want to know the happy ending, right? You with me with this happy ending? So this was like in the summer when all this crap happened. Christmas comes along, and big company party. I'm the star, the boss. I did a couple favors, and he's making a big deal out of this. And all of a sudden, this guy comes up out of the crowd, and he reaches out to me. He says, no thumb. He reaches out, and he says, "I want to thank you for helping me." The guy that cut his thumb off and that I had thrown out of my apartment, still working there, and he's thanking me for helping him. How did Charlie pull this one off? Ooh, Lord love a duck. So, we don't have enough time, and I don't want to bore you with any of this stuff, but my whole sobriety has been one incredible story after another. Stories that, on the surface, they sound like fiction. They sound like an O. Henry story, something like that, you know? Let me bore you with just one more. Hank. This one is Hank. Hank is the son of a bitch that when he caught the old lady putting cat food out under the bushes for the cat, he'd be cussing and screaming at this old lady. She must have been 80 years old for feeding the cats. And I just hated this guy's guts. I saved up some money, and I bought this a little green Mustang. I had it in the back parking lot. I was fixing it up. Came back one night after work. Mustang is gone. "Hank, what's the story on the Mustang? Did somebody steal it?" He says, "No, I had it towed away. It was a piece of junk." Charlie, I want to kill this guy. What will they give me if I kill this guy? It just really upset me. What do I do? He says, "Owen, trust me, you got to pray for this guy for 21 days. Dear Lord, let him win the lottery. Dear Lord, let him have a new girlfriend. Dear Lord, da-da-da-da-da. Dear Lord, pray for 21 days. You got to do this. But not too much money. I prayed that I get some more money, but not too much. On the 22nd day, I'm at a meeting about a mile and a half from my house. I get there early. I help set up. I go sit in the corner. I'd like the John Wayne seat. I'd like to see him coming in. All of a sudden, guess who's coming through the door? Anybody want to guess? Hank comes through the door, eyeballs me, walks straight up to me. Owen, will you be my sponsor? Oh, you son of a bitch. How can I can't make that stuff up. Jeepers, creepers. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Well, the good thing is this. I received patent number 5,009,243 for a solar harness. I'm an inventor. I was elected to be the vice president of the National Forensic Center of Distinguished Experts. Got 5 living kids. And I'm a recovering alcoholic. I'm a recovering alcoholic. I stole a car when I was 13 years old, and I'm an alcoholic. I've repaid for that theft. I've basically done all my steps. And I still keep thinking, remembering things that I really should be sorry for, that I should make amends for. You can do that here in this program. It's a design for living for each single person. You know, think about it. This is the greatest social organization that's ever hit the world. We're in every country in the world. In Antarctica, Alaska, da-da-da-da-da. You're part of a big team. Teamwork makes the dreams work. I still have big dreams. I'm not getting any trouble. I don't get in any trouble anymore. I invite you to reach out and ask God to help you make your dreams come true. Heal the relationships that have gone wrong. Fix yourself financially. Oh, financially. Oh, financially. Oh. One quick one about the financing. Do you know that Truman, President Truman, actually went bankrupt when he and his buddy went in business and got out of the service? His buddy ran the business into bankruptcy. But Truman didn't want to file for bankruptcy. He made a list, and he put, at the top of the list, he put the oldest debt, not the largest debt, the oldest, and then the sequence of the list of the people that owed. He divided the money that he had in 3 parts, and 1/3 of it, he gave most of it to the oldest one and a couple bucks to everybody else, letting them know that as soon as this guy was paid off, the next guy is going to get paid off, and the next guy is going to get paid off. 1 year after he completely got out of debt, he was elected president of the United States. That's what Charlie did for me. Charlie helped me pay all my bills and all my people off, all my taxes off. I can say today that I'm one of the best friends of the IRS. I'm first in line. So it's a... Look, if you're here, you're a member of this group. That's the truth. If you're here tonight, you're a member of this group. You're always welcome. We cannot fire you. We cannot throw you out. We're going to help you the way somebody helped me. So... Made a searching and fearless moral made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. What this involves is joining a group that actually works on the 12 steps. There's one of them over in Hellertown. And what they do is you're in the group and you've each got a folder. And you start out by writing the names of everybody you know down. And then the next time through, you write down the name of every institution that you know about, whether it's a post office or whether it's a bank, da-da-da-da-da. And there's a third thing and a fourth thing. And what you do is you just follow directions right along with the guy that's next to you is doing the same thing as the girl next to you. You're going through it. And the formula evolves to where you find out that one person connected over here is connected to this situation over here. And you start realizing that the chaos in your life centers on you. And as you detach from each one of these things, it's like putting fertilizer on a plant. Things just start to come around patiently. One day at a time, you rise up with the rest of us. It's a wonderful opportunity. So, admitted to God ourselves and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. This is the one that we need a sponsor for. You gotta, before you go racing off, making apologies and making amends to people, there's some people that aren't ready for that. They remember how badly you screwed up or how badly they hurt you. And what your sponsor can do, your sponsor can help you prioritize, rehearse, practice, be ready when you go in and you're rejected. It's okay. It's okay if they don't accept it. You did your part, and that's what it's all about. You're making yourself free. It's on them after that. And eventually, it's been my experience, eventually the people come around when they see the changes in you. So, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. I'm sorry to tell you this. There's a couple I'm not ready to. Even 36 years, I'm never going to forgive my mother-in-law. I won't even go into it. You're not going to turn out perfect. You got to accept something. Humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. I did this by making up a prayer. Do you know that in AA you can make up your own prayers? It's really cool if you think about it. Let me share my prayer with you. Thank you, dear God, for all the blessings of today and all the cares and sorrows kept away. There's certain things that we can't change. We gotta accept it. But you can make direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when do so would injure them or others. That's especially true for men. We have no right in going back and revealing problems that you had with somebody else's wife. You've got to let it go. Just give it to God and let God take care of it. We continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admit it. This is what I call the Irish step. Irish guys just don't back up. They just can't do it. You can do it. You can practice. You can go to your sponsor and say, "Listen, this is what I want to say. Does this sound crazy to you?" And he'll say something like, "Get a haircut and we'll talk about it in the morning." Continue to take personal inventory and when we're wrong, promptly admit it. Did I lie to anybody today? Did I steal a piece of candy from Wawa while I was waiting in line? Did I shortchange anybody? It's a little short list before you go to sleep at night. Dear God, thank you for all the blessings of today and all the care you've shown to put away. I'll try and be a better person tomorrow. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God as I understood it. Praying only for knowledge for the will to us and the power to carry that out. Biggest surprise in the world for me is I went to a whole bunch of churches until I finally found one. I found a church that not only likes me, we agree on a lot of stuff. They don't ask for money at every service. That kind of thing. So, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, when somebody calls you up on a holiday afternoon and says, hey, listen, you know that meeting over there at the Mennonite Church at 9 o'clock? I need your help. Can you speak there tonight? Let me call you back. Will you split the collection with me? Somebody got it. No, I told my old lady, I said, look, I made a commitment to never say no. If somebody asks for help, you just don't say no. They didn't say no for me. They didn't say no to me. I was 2 years in AA. I was a good person. I didn't do anything wrong. And I got stopped by the cops. I hadn't been drinking. I got stopped by the cops. I got a ticket. I couldn't find my insurance. I got this is in Jersey. You know what they do to people over in Jersey if they don't have insurance? They took my license away from me for 2 years. But I'm sober. Well, you didn't pay your insurance. For 2 years, somebody picked me up, took me to work, took me to get my groceries, took me to the dentist, took me to the doctor. The AA taxi service is a lie, and this is how it works. You get to a meeting early, and somebody's coming in, and you say a little simple thing like, by the way, do you mind giving me a ride home? Or, by the way, would you mind taking me to work in the morning? Or, whatever need. When you ask for help, if they can help you, they will. If they can, they'll help you find the help. This is what we do here. We're practicing for heaven. This is where we do it. You got me off track. So, I believe I had a spiritual awakening this afternoon when Terry asked me to come and speak to you people tonight. Try and carry the message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our prayers. To practice these principles in all of our prayers. To practice these principles in all of our prayers. No, you don't practice all the affairs. I 13 stepped on people. I'm sorry. I didn't know better. I know better now. This is for men helping men, and it's for women helping women. The only woman that I have any dealings with, the only woman, her name is Mary, she's a preacher. When a girl asks me to be her sponsor, I say, I'll be your sponsor if you'll meet my friend Mary. And I take her to Mary, and Mary takes over. I don't need any more of that stuff. Trust me. Get physically, mentally, and financially straight first. All right, so we're going to have a slight quiz and find out if everybody heard what I said. But before we do that, I wanted to read something to you. Do you have the promises in here? Let's see. No?
Big book.
Thank you. Here we got it. We got somebody. 83 and 84. Woohoo! Brian's a winner.
Okay.
So where are we at here? 83. Take down. If we were painstaking. All right. It's been a real honor and pleasure to celebrate my anniversary with you guys. I know half of you. If you don't remember anything else, it's okay. But try and remember this. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. we're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we've gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. And we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. Get this. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises?
We may not.
They're being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. Thank you so much for your attention.